Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. You ain't heard nothing yet.
Houston, we have a problem.
They're here.
Stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Hey, how you doing, all you Brooklyn Buddhists? This is Woody Massey, producer of the Jimmy Della Valley Brooklyn Buddha Podcast, co-hosted by Tim Humamune. Jimmy's out on the East Coast, hitting up some dates right now, getting ready for that big tour in 2015. You should go check it out. He's going on a big tour with a few other comedians, including Vic DiPetetto. It's going to be great. You guys should go online, jimmydellavalley.com, check it out. Look up his dates while he's out there on the East Coast. Today on the podcast, we had young comedian Billy Batts. Billy Batts from the East Coast, runs a few rooms out here in L.A. Really great young comedian. Love some old school metalhead rock and roll. And it was a really good time, a really great interview. I think you guys are going to enjoy it. And once again, check jimmydellavalley.com for all the big dates coming in 2015. And stay safe and forget about it.
Brooklyn Buddha.
So, you have your veteran comedians, your younger comedians. This guy's in the middle. This is a guy who, when I first saw him, it wasn't funny. It wasn't funny at all. He was producing comedy shows, because that's what you have to do when you come out to L.A. You don't know anybody, you don't know what's up. You want to be a comedian, you have to kind of produce your own show or do open mics. He starts working with a guy, and he started getting funny. I started seeing him get funny. I haven't seen him in years, and I just started going to his shows again, and the kid's got funny. And you're like, holy shit. Now, the problem that he doesn't understand is if he would have been in New York City or something like that, he would have been funny many, many years ago. He'd have really got his vibe. He's starting to find his comedic voice. And that's, you know, I mean, and, you know, as Tim's doing it 20 years. It takes a long time. But, you know, that's the thing. We'll talk to him. Anyways, Tim, my co-host, say what's up to
him. How you doing?
Woody, say what's up.
Hello.
Hello. And this is my buddy, Billy Batts.
What's up?
Good. I'm excited you're here, Billy.
I'm excited, too. I got to clear up some things, though. Yeah. I did start in New York.
Right.
Yeah, I did start in New York. I started in upstate New York. And right. Then I eventually did the mics at Dangerfields and the Cellar and took the train up there and did all that. So I started up there, and then I came over here and... The partner that you met me with, the reason why I wasn't funny is because right. I just met that person that held me down for so long, and I wasn't able to move anywhere because of it.
Exactly. Well, what happens is people don't understand. L.A., it can kick you in the balls, and you can get fucking buried, and then you come back up. What I've learned over the years is persistence is what is going to going to work in Los Angeles if you are persistent. And Billy, you were persistent. You were like, when I first met you, you're like, well, I'm doing this show we did in like the Taboo Lounge, and it was like, it was good. But then there was, you know, and then a lot of good comics started doing it, and we're doing it, and then you're like, oh, I'm a stripper DJ or whatever the hell you were, right?
Yeah,
you know, so you're doing that, and then
it's been a fun job.
Oh, it was great.
Yeah,
it was great.
And what was that place?
It was, I DJed for 8 years of my life in different strip clubs.
Okay. Yeah. Excellent. So,
favorite song to drop?
Any rock song. This Drake and monotone hip hop that's coming out these days, it's driving me nuts. So, I'm old school. 80s rock all day.
Excellent. Yeah.
Little REO Speedwagon?
Hell yeah.
Little one handed Def Leppard?
Sure. Sure, why not?
So
little
good.
Max Goldstein.
So, were you funny as a DJ? Like, what made you want to do stand-up?
What made me want to do stand-up? Well, I originally started in bands in upstate New York. I was part of the number one metal band in the tri-state area called the Clay People. I was a drummer. And our band split up around the year 99 to 2000. And if you look up the band, the lead singer had such an original voice. And we used to open up for Gore, Rob Zombie, and stuff. And such an original voice that it was just hard to replace. So I picked up a microphone on my birthday, and it was a dare at a cafe to go up and do an open mic, and I just caught the bug. And that's what kicked off my stand-up career.
Did you perform at The Haunt in Ithaca?
No. It was Mother Earth's Cafe at the time in Albany, New York.
Okay, Albany.
Yeah. Now, when you were a drummer, you wanted to kind of be the singer at all? Like, you wanted to be at the stage, or you were kind of...
I was happy being a drummer, yeah.
Did you look up to, like, Tommy Lee, and... Is he, like, one of the best drummers?
I look up to Joey Jordison. He was the drummer of Slipknot. He has his own band out right now. He played with Metallica,
Korn. My good friend's Phil Barone.
Yeah. Phil's amazing.
And Phil's coming back. He just told me
He lives in Vegas right now, right? Yeah. So he's coming
directing
back.
Porn right now.
Not surprising.
That's what he does. He directs porn.
Well, you know, he has the drumstick shaped as, you know, male members that he sells to women. Yeah. That's,
well, but, you know, he's amazing. He was the drummer for, he was the Skid second Row. Drummer for Skid Row.
And then he
toured all over the world.
He started Saigon Kick as well.
You know, he's a handsome dude. He's like in his 40s. Tons of pussy. He had a sexual addiction. He was like on sex rehab and
I forget the doctor's name, but
Dr. Drew. But anyways, great guy, and he used to do stand up, and he used to book me on his show at the Improv, which was rock and roll sex comedy. It was sell out, and it was
always
insane.
Packed.
It was
always
like at
packed.
Midnight on a Saturday. It was in fucking insane, that show. So anyways, me and Tim, I was headlining in Vegas, and this gorgeous girl is the MC. Tim is on, and I see the girl, and I see her kissing on the guy, and whatever. And I go up, and the guy doesn't realize, you know, whatever. And I'm doing my thing, I break his balls, bah, 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 bah. And then I get off stage, and he goes, "Hey, man, you were so funny." And I go, "Aren't you Phil Verone?" And he goes, "Yeah." I go, "Jimmy D, fucking moron." He goes, "Oh, my God." And then we, like, reconnected. And the MC was Addie Martin, who's like, she's gorgeous.
I know her
she's
as
big
well. Yes,
pot, yeah, you know, yeah. Pot advocate.
Well, the funny thing with that show is,
it was a slammy show.
It was a slammy show.
Yeah, because I was headlining the weekend, but I did like a weekday.
I'm doing slammy on the 29th.
Yeah,
he's great. So Jimmy's about
big
to go
fan
on.
I love slammy.
Jimmy's slammy. About to go on, so we're by the front door. The front.
Oh,
front.
The fuck!
And I just got off stage. So I was just, hey, you know, I had some notes for Jimmy to try some new stuff. And some guy, was it the owner?
Yeah, so this guy comes up to
screaming at us.
Like, we had our jokes in our pocket or whatever it was. And the guy grabs my hand, like, almost like in Rounders when they grab the hand when he's dealing. And he grabs my hand. "What's in your pocket? What's in your pocket?" And Tim goes,
"What?" He goes, "You know, drugs here.
No drugs in my pocket." Oh, my God. He goes nuts. He goes, Slammy's over here. Slammy doesn't know what's going on. He doesn't even see this. And then fucking Tim, who barely will speak up for anything, and Tim goes, "Let me tell you, you're fucking barking up the wrong tree." He goes, "Jimmy fucking hates drugs."
Yeah.
It had nothing to do with it. He's like, "I saw you."
I'm sitting there taking out notes.
"You're fucking crazy."
Like, look,
you're
this comedy is
crazy.
Comedy, no, you're screaming at us.
So then and the guy goes, "I'm sorry." You know, and then I kill, and then he loves me.
Meanwhile, his workers are smuggling cocaine and their chicken wings in the back.
But it's like, but it's so hilarious. It's like, he's the club owner, and then he's a huge fan of mine.
And
now
he was mad. You didn't have I wanted some.
But anyways, so you're out. You you start in upstate New York. You come out here. What makes you come out here?
It was just following the dream, honestly. It was, I was getting thrown
stripper
out
of... Stripper DJ.
Well, no, it was the comedy. The comedy. It was more or less, I had to sell all my drum kits to come out here once I decided, and I was going to pick up drumming again, and it's expensive. I had four kits I sold, and just to pick it back up, it's expensive to, buy kits again. So I just picked up a mic. I continued the dream of comedy, and... that's what brought me out here, really. It's just thinking that this is where everything is. And now that I'm out here, I realize it's just a big mind melt. Because, this is, this is the land of opportunity out here. But at the same time, you have hundreds and hundreds of people getting off the bus every day out here. And it's not as easy as someone from a small town would thought it'd be,
So what about this Blue Man Group? Did you ever think you could fucking do that?
No. I mean,
drum that good?
I've always made people laugh growing up, and so that's where it was, and like I said, after that first open mic, I caught the bug, and I was like, this is what I really want to do. And I look up to people like Henry Rollins from the Rollins Band, who started out as a musician, you know? I mean, he's a hardcore rocker, and then he turns comedian. Phil Verone, like you said, you know, there's so many. It seems like rock and roll and comedy go hand in hand so much, where it's like, you know, musicians always want to be funny, you know? And it's like, I just caught that bug after that first mic. I was like, this is where I need to be.
Well, like I said, when I first saw you, you were just kind of, you're like up there and you're just talking. You got a little bit of an East Coast to you and you're going. And I'm going, this guy doesn't get it. I don't know, because I don't know what you were going for at that point. I didn't like a lot of those guys. So I didn't really put my help into it. You know, I could have like helped you. So then when I saw you at Springbok the other day, and I was like, I go, This is what you got to focus on. That's your point of view. Right. You grew up in upstate New York with this John Deere thing. All that shit is universal. That's what people are going to like.
Well, I think I was still finding my voice, too, when you first saw me. And then, of course, the guy that was my business partner with the shows that you met, I mean, he was... I mean, you know exactly who he is. He's busy, you know, with what he wants to do all the time, and it kind of held me back from writing to where I got stuck in a suck hole of that, what you saw.
Right.
And then once I broke away from him, that's when I found what I need to talk about.
Right, right.
Because I didn't have him hold me back anymore. It was more like, I'm free, I'm going to do my thing, and that's it, you know?
So you came out here. How long have you been out here?
I've been out here since 2002.
Okay, so 2002. You came out for stand-up. Did you want to do acting, or is that a possibility, or was...
No, I've gotten booked for background stuff through stand-up, and the Showtime I Am Comic, they filmed in a bar I was at, and I was an MC on there, but I'm never really into acting. If it comes along with the gig, I'll do it. You know, I got to pay rent, so it's better than getting a day job while doing stand-up, you know? Right. So I'll do it, but the main goal and vision is just stand-up.
Right, right. So you're out here, you're hustling. You know, as I say, comics that move up the ranks, it's not that they have survival jobs. They have things that they're good at. So, like, now I never knew anything about this drumming. That's great to know. Yeah. So, and I think that any... great entertainers that will become great entertainers, or they're on their way, or whatever it is, they're a triple threat. So you have your DJing, you have your drumming, you have your stand-up. So that's what you're focusing on. That's what's going to be able to pay your bills. Like, what about this, like my buddy DJ Cooch is like a pretty well-known fucking DJ.
DJ, yeah.
And he's a really great stand-up, right? But, I mean, he makes killer money as a DJ.
Right, right.
So did you ever think... man, I could do this. I could go to the next level.
Do own a DJ company, in fact.
Right.
It's called Steam Fresh Entertainment, where we do comedy, karaoke, and DJing. So no matter what you need for an event, we have it. So, yeah, I've started that. I do karaoke at different venues when I'm not doing comedy. Right. I also do private weddings, different events with the DJing. So right now I just started the company. As it grows, I'll be able to charge his price. But right now, I'm just at a cheaper level where it's like I'm just getting my name out there and getting the top high end equipment. So yeah, I've actually thought about that, and I'm doing the same thing.
So have you, like I said, I know you seem now with the business, you seem focused. You were a drummer, DJ, you did strip joints, regular DJing, and comedy. Did you ever get focused? You know, most musicians, you know, they want fame, but they want to get laid. Focus on women. You're at a strip joint.
You know, it's funny. Back in the day, I did have my day of partying a lot worth, you know, and unfortunately that led to medical issues that opened my eyes where I no longer use anything anymore. And that was my big focus, just getting laid and stuff like that. But if you keep on focusing on that, you're just going to get a big mind block.
Yeah.
And especially in comedy, when it's important to keep on writing, show who you are, find your voice, you're never going to do it. I'd be back in that suck hole if I continued that.
Yeah, because I've noticed that with you, that you seem very focused now.
Definitely seem focused. I mean, back then you were kind of, hey, I'm at the fucking strip joint with the Armenians. Yeah. I work with Armenians. Like,
you were crazy.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? That's true. You were completely fucking crazy, and that's why I was like,
I was an Italian turning Armenian, and I didn't see it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, I can't. You're like, I'm moving to Glendale, fucking promised land. I'm like,
pasta and hummus, pasta and hummus.
Yeah, you know, like, you know. So that's what it was. So it was like, oh, this guy's, you know, maybe he's doing drugs. I don't know what he's doing, but it's like, no, that guy, his focus isn't there. I can't. Because I completely step in. I'll see guys just any fucking show, that stupid studio suite, whatever it is, and I'll grab guys and I'll take them on the road with me. There's a comic, I can't remember what his name is, but it's like, you know, I help so many comics. Like, when I take them on the road and then they kind of like go behind my back after, and then they're like, oh, hey, I booked this gig. Oh, I'm opening for blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I was going to book you there. I'm headlining there. He's like...
Do you really see that as going behind your back or someone that is hustling and just trying to get as much work as possible?
When I take somebody under my wing, they kind of need to let me know. They can't just... I shouldn't come to you and say, hey, I got to get you. Oh, I'm already booked. I need to know. Because I've taken them under my wing.
Is that something
it's
you
almost
make-
like I'm managing them... and grooming them into a comic.
But do you make that clear in the beginning, or is that something that you just get
Tim,
offended in the middle?
Do I make things clear?
Mostly.
Okay, well, if you make it clear in the beginning, then I understand. But clear. Yeah, the way you made it sound at first was like you take them on a road, then all of a sudden they say they're, hey, I'm doing something big now, and you're like, wait a minute.
Right.
I was supposed to help you with that. So.
Right. No, I'm very, you got to watch that. I'm very clear with, look, this is if I take you on the road, we're gonna do this, we're going to do that. I'm grooming you. I'm helping you. If I'm going to put my time into it, because it's that's the thing. It's like such a cutthroat business.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. Me and Tim, constantly, if I'm headlining somewhere, he's headlining, he's like, Jimmy's fucking great. Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, Tim's great. There's no doubt. We vouch
and
for each other.
It's important to have someone vouch for you these days, because if you're on your own, the only thing that will help you is social media, and that really upsets me because... You know, we all come from a day of older school where it's like you had to prove yourself on stage. Nowadays, it seems like if you have the numbers on Twitter, if you have it on Periscope, if you have it on Facebook, whatever's out there, you know, Instagram, you get booked. And that, to me, doesn't really prove anything. So
that was the first question I got asked by a manager. What's your Twitter following?
Yeah, so it doesn't matter your talent as long as you have the following. And that's something that's crazy these days. So to have someone vouch for you. That is one of the biggest things you can have probably these days.
Yeah, I was headlining Levity Live, which is one of the best comedy clubs in the country. It's in Nyack, New York.
Yeah. The
place is amazing. And, you know, I'm headlining there, and then they're like, oh, next Wednesday we have blah, 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 Vine Sensation. I'm like, he ain't no fucking comic. I'm like, this guy never did stand-up in his life.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, but he's already sold out the show. And I'm like, what's he going to do? And the guy literally went up there. He's got notes. And he does about 45 minutes, you know, like, and I
probably
ask people,
internet jokes because it's an internet sensation.
I'm like, how was he, you know, how did he do? And they're like, oh, it was fucking horrible, but he sold out, you know, and this place is huge. So, and that's the problem. That's what, like, I love social media, but that's also what I hate about social media.
Yeah.
It's ruining the business of stand-up comedy. You know, it helps it, but it ruins it. But, like, a great thing for... social media is Vic DiBattista, who's a phenomenal stand-up comic. I'm going on tour. We're doing a whole bunch of theaters. And Richie Minervini.
That's to do that. I got to get the milk. Right?
Yeah. Bread and milk. Bread and milk, right?
Yeah.
The bread and milk video. Look him up. VicDiBattista.net, the best comic, you know, hilarious. So Vic is already a phenomenal headliner.
30 plus years.
Phenomenal. I used to open for him. Tim opened for him. Just one of my favorites. A mentor to me. And then he all of a sudden starts doing videos. He starts putting out these videos.
Hundreds. The funny thing is he puts hundreds of videos. Nothing.
And
he
then
puts
that,
one.
The bread
you know,
and milk.
Bread and milk. 29 seconds.
Yeah.
And fucking YouTube sensation.
But see, I can respect him because he started as a comic.
Yeah, right.
He's not one of these guys that put up a foofy cat video.
Exactly.
And then got all these hits, and now
I'm
the comic
thinking about
clubs,
putting up foofy cat videos.
It's like, just because your cat looked up it sounded like he said hello or something, and everyone likes it.
Exactly.
And now all of a sudden you're going to headline, and it's like you've never done comedy in your life.
Yeah.
That's the killer about, you know, social media. That's the killer about YouTube. That's the killer about all that.
Yeah, that's the thing. It really
pissing me. You know, and then there's your other, you know, your shady bookers. There's a booker in Vegas now. Not going to say his name. So he's doing these shows, and he's not very funny, and he keeps getting venues to book comedy shows, and he's packing his shows, and he puts shitty comics, he's paying shitty money, and then he's teaching a comedy class, and he's teaching the business of comedy. I'm like, you don't even make a living as a comedian. You make a living of fucking other comics. But he's teaching classes, and comedians can be so desperate now. They're taking these classes, and you're like, you know, now, Steve Hofstetter is, you know, a good friend of mine. He's been around a long time. He does the business of comedy. He's teaching you. There's nobody better than fucking that kid at knowing the business of comedy. He could teach a fucking course.
I kind of understand how people get sucked in because they hear Las Vegas and someone teaching comedy there. And you think the City of Sins, that would be the, you know, top place to learn. And it's there's a lot of people out here doing that. There's a guy at the Comedy Store right now doing that who's not, you know, I don't find him funny, and he's not booking himself out. He's just really hustling comics and hustling regular people to do a graduation bringer show. That's all it is.
The graduation bringer show. It really has ruined the stand-up comedy world. How long have you done it, Woody?
I'm just starting year three.
Right, so you're three, right? So have you been roped into those, like Tim, fucking veteran comic, he moves out here, and Tim calls me, hey man, they asked me to do the Comedy Store, the main room, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah, that's
funny. And I'm like, you know, don't say his name, right? And he goes, you know, do the main room, and I go, it's a bringer. It's a fucking bringer. Don't do that show.
I asked the booker, I said, look, I'm not a bringer, right? He goes, no, you're not bringing. I go, you sure? Because I'm gonna, you know, promote it because it's, you know, it's the main room, and I go down there.
There's like fucking maybe six people, eight people in the audience, whatever it is, and then Tim doesn't have any people. He didn't bring it. They don't put Tim up.
You know? Did they ask you to buy tickets if you couldn't bring anybody?
Yeah. Like that.
Did they do that move on you?
But he gave me that. Where's your people? And I said, no, I'm booked as a non-bringer. And he goes, no, there are no non-bringers. I said, I already talked to the booker. This is the guy running it. And I said, I already talked. He goes, no. He just says that to get people.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, what the fuck? I go, look, I used to be a booker. I used to book bringer shows. Who's your comics, your professionals? Oh, we don't use professionals.
Yeah.
Who books a fucking bringer show where people are paying money?
Yeah, and you exactly. Don't even,
and this guy's the MC. This guy sucks. So he's a shitty MC. He puts on all amateurs, and then I go, how long is the show? He goes, sometimes 45 minutes. Who fucking pays as an audience member to go see a shitty show?
Yeah.
45 minutes, and then it's done. I go, look, you're at the Comedy Store.
Not only
you don't get the fucking one of the, you know, main guys to just pop over and do new stuff?
Yeah.
No, we don't need them.
They don't give a shit.
It's not, you're not only paying for
the only reason you do those is to just get in front of people that are in the club.
But you're not only paying for the ticket as audience member, you're paying for parking, you're paying for food, the two-item minimum. So what, you're at like $50 by the time they get to see you, and if you bring the most people, they're going to save you to the end. So they, you know, your people are sitting there listening to the shittiest comedy ever, and it's crazy. And this is a club that has Sam Kinison on her wall, Robin Williams. It has, you know, it has Richard Pryor on its wall. It has, I mean, they advertise on their wall the best names there is in comedy.
You never know who might drop in.
Right, but then they put on shows like that, and it's disappointing because, you know, your people go there expecting to see these people.
I was my ex-wife, and I used to book some shows.
You were your ex-wife?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
My ex-wife and I were booking, you know, some shows. I never put my name as a producer, so she would be the producer because I didn't want everyone swamping me.
Yeah.
So we had some big shows, and then the club owners told her they want to book a bringer show. And we're like, I don't want to book bringer shows. So I said, oh, look, this is what we'll do. We'll give them half the door. We'll help. We'll give them a little flyer. We'll videotape them, and we'll put them in our other shows. Right. You know, help them out. Because they're helping us out, we help them out.
Right.
And we do so well that we got a backlog of these, you know, bringer comics. They are waiting to do the next show. So we have a meeting. I go to the meeting. We're in the basement. And it's the other bringer producers. And they actually wanted to ban us because we ruined it for them. So they said, oh, our guys, our bringers don't want to do our show anymore because you're giving them half the door, what they bring, and you're giving them a tape, which we charge $50 for, and you're giving them a free spot else, so you're ruining it for us. I said, well, then why don't you just do that? I'm making money.
Yeah.
I'm helping them out. They're helping me. We're helping each other. Oh, we can't do that.
You God know, forbid like, you're creative.
That's why I lost all respect for most bringer shows. I mean, they're just disgusting.
Now, we used to do bringer shows, but we weren't bringers. We would be paid in New York City to MC, or we would headline. Those were the only spots they'd pay.
Right.
And then you'd be sitting there on like a shitty bringer show. And as I said out here when I first moved out here in 2004, I'm at Lovett's Comedy Club, and I'm headlining. The show sold out, 300 people, you know, all three levels. Everything's great. And are you ready for your headliner? And then I come up, you know, after 12 horrendous comics, the show sold out. And I go, just so you know, I'm not the headliner. I am the last guy tonight. I explain, headliner, there's an MC, there's a guy who does about 20 to 30 minutes, and then the headliner. I go, after 12 comics, I'm just the guy who got stuck on the 405 on the way here. And that's, so that became like my joke.
Yeah.
And all the comics try to steal it, you know. But it was so true, and I was like, And I was friends with the owner and stuff, and I said, you are killing this fucking club. Killing this
first
club.
First or second
and,
owner?
Both. And, it went out of business.
Yeah.
It went out of fucking business. And that guy is a multimillionaire, and he was just putting in money, and then your old partner was booking those bringer shows.
Yeah. One of the reasons why I left him, because I don't believe in bringer shows.
Ever. He was booking. So I start watching, and then I'm like, you know, and that would drive me insane to see the flyers, and it'd be like, headliner. I'm like, headliner? This bitch is an open micer.
The headliner only show.
Oh, yeah, I got to tell my story. So I go to, living in New York, flying back and forth. I go to Love's, Jimmy introduces me to the Booker, I won't say the name. Booker says, I know you from somewhere. Just come back tomorrow. I come back, I do a spot. I do well. They go, Detroit. I saw you in Detroit. It's a club, Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle. And I had just headlined. Seats 400. Sold out, 400. Kill. They saw me on that amazing show. In their head, I'm this draw. You know, I sold out 400 seats every show. So they book me as the headliner, you know, and they're paying it. And at first they go, oh, you know, budget's 500. And I'm thinking, I can't reproduce it. I can't get that many crowd. No, that's minimum. Well, minimum. And I said, well, no, I can't. Like, I'm turning them down. And they go, no, we're giving you that if you get more. So then I said, I can't draw anything. And they said, oh, you'll be fine. We'll promote the hell out of it. We'll get you every... And they didn't do nothing. And it was literally empty. You know, like I had Jimmy on the show, some friends that, you know, they were helping bring some people. It was empty.
Did you get your 500?
Barely. So I actually had to fight because they didn't want to give it the whole thing. And I was like, well, I'm paying these... I'm paying the comics. And
right,
I said,
right.
Well, we didn't, you know, like they gave me the shit that... I said, I warned you in the beginning. You saw me in a club that already has a crowd. I'm not the draw. I told you that. But they're like, oh, like they didn't understand the concept. And then, of course, the club closed. That's all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, so you're out here. And would you ever go back to the East Coast and live?
I've been considering it for when I retire. I'm thinking about, you know, maybe by the lake, upstate New York, somewhere I could fish off my backyard. You know, if my business grows, you know, the comedy business grows to where I can afford to come back here, still continue to do comedy, mm-hmm. but have my place back east where I could go back, relax, still do comedy in the city, but have my nice little peaceful place in upstate.
That's a funny thing. What's your goal? My goal is to finish my backyard.
That's so fun. Yeah. So how old are you now?
I'm 33 right now.
So you're 33. And I see you post about, you know, things, good things, bad things, everything.
Have you been in a, have you almost gotten married or anything?
Funny, when I first moved out here, yes, I was, I met a girl from Ecuador, and we got engaged, and her visa ran out for a long time, and right before we went to Vegas to get married, the government came, knocked on the door, and took her back away, and it was very heartbreaking wow. back then. Very heartbreaking.
Maybe it was your old producer got deported.
Yeah, it's it Juliana. Yeah, she's somewhere in Europe, you know, floating around.
And you don't talk to her on Facebook or nothing?
But she came back again, and years later, and we tried doing a whole long-distance phone thing, which kind of faded out, and then she met some other guy, so we just kind of went our own separate
right.
ways.
Right.
But, yeah, you know, I'd consider getting married. Right now isn't the right time. You know, I just got to have a relationship, and I just got to focus more on my comedy than women right now. But, you know, once I get to the level where my comedy's where I want it to be at, and then my side business is where it's, I want it to be at, then, yeah, I'd consider it, finding the right woman.
Are you, do you date comics?
I don't, you know, it's funny. This is the thing that pisses me off about female comics. And it's not just because, you know, there's a couple out there I do like, and they have this rule that they will not date comics. And it's like, comics are people too. I mean, yeah. My whole thing is, it doesn't matter what you do. Like, fucking, if you're a trash person, I don't care. If we get along, we get along. Yeah. And we can make things work. So I'll date a comic, I'll date, you know, whatever. I mean, if I like the girl, I like the girl.
Right. Yeah, that's, you know, it's funny. My buddy just moved. Calverducci, you know Calverducci.
Yeah, he's on the road right now, going to Florida.
Yeah, so he just moved. He just left L.A. He didn't love his L.A. life. He was Ubering and stuff, you know. And I've known him since he started, you know. And the thing about him was, he would meet sometimes comics, and they would go, "Oh, I don't date comics." And I told them, I said, that's bullshit. That's their bullshit thing. I go, if you have a connection with them, you can. He goes, no. She would never date a comic. And I'm like, look, if I wasn't married, I would show you I could fuck her. I don't give a fuck what you say.
Exactly.
It's like, are you kidding? I never heard of such bullshit, you know. And I know that actresses, it's like I've gone to acting class as a guest, and I did a scene, And then my buddy's in the scene. That's what, or buddy's in the class, and I go to the class, and he's like, "Oh man, that." And the girl comes up to me. I'm like, "Dude, this girl's like into me. I'm married." I'm telling her, "No." He's like, "Dude, she doesn't date actors anyway." I'm like, "What? Are you fucking out of your mind, dude?"
You know what that is when a girl says that.
There's no game. There's no game there. It's like and that's an East Coast thing. It's like, you know, you have game. It's like we have that vibe of, you know, Tim doesn't have game.
Well, here's the thing about East Coast and West Coast women. This is the difference. Like, where we're from back east, you go walk up to a girl on the subway. If she sees you come in, it's either hello or fuck you. And if she says fuck you, you go on to the next one.
Right.
Which is cool.
Keep it moving.
Over here, you got to talk to a girl for like an hour and a half buying her drinks before you even find out she has a boyfriend, which is bullshit. That's the difference between the two. The comics and actresses saying they don't date other comics or actresses, this is what it really is. It's an underlying code of them saying, I don't want to look like a slut in front of my friends. Mm-hmm. If you want to meet up later, if you have enough game, we'll do that.
Sure.
Because I've fucked other female comics, and that's just what they say in front of their friends, and they don't want it getting out to look like a whore.
Yeah, and they don't want to, you know, get out there. It's like, you know, not that it's even a whore. It's like you're it's funny. I remember meeting my wife, and me and Adam Hunter, we were doing shows at Gladys's, this hamburger place, and Gaffigan used to do them, and Judah, we all did them. You know, I remember
when Adam was in Magnum Comedy Management.
Oh yeah, yeah, sure, yeah. Sure.
So with, KT Tatar and stuff.
Right. So we're doing the shows. Yeah, no, I know Zach Miller. You know.
Yeah.
So We're doing the shows, and my woman, who is my wife now, she comes up to me after the show. We're talking. I was dating her, and I brought her to the show. And she's like, she goes to her girlfriend and goes, "What else?" Her girlfriend goes, "What else do you do?" And she goes, "Oh, he's a comedian. That's what he does for a living." And she's like, she goes, "Oh, no, but, you know, you have, like, a day job." And she's like, "No, this is what he does." She goes, "Why would he do this show?" She's like, this is what comics, we work out our act, and then on the weekend I'm headlining, you know, somewhere. But they don't, people don't get it. So there's a difference of, like, if you're like Tim, perfect example. Yeah. Tim, right? He's dating his wife, and we figured it out, what, 10 years later, 13 years later, what you said. Tim said to me, he goes, I said, why didn't it work? He goes, well, you know what? He goes, it didn't work because of a lot of things. He goes, but what your main thing was, and this stuck in my head, what you said. He goes, she thought I was more successful than I was. When she was an open micer.
Still, to this day.
Right. And Tim was a headliner. She was an open. So Tim would tell clubs, look, you're going to book her. You want to book me. So that there was a package deal, and they were doing. They went on the road together.
Well, I think what every, I mean, there's so many failures. The comics dating, actors dating, the other actors, but there's still successes. I mean, you know, you got your. I mean, old school, the Gracie Allen and.
Well, you still Turner. Have like Dante and Rebecca right now. Yeah. They've been together strong for a while, and are about to get married.
Yeah, right. There's. You know? I think it's there's pros and cons, but it can definitely work. Like I said, pros, some are good, some things could be a little rough, but you understand each other. I mean, it's like Jimmy said, people don't understand the life of a comic. They think I make a fortune performing out, you know.
I tell them, I'm like, I do the comedy show, I get $10. I go to the Laugh Factory, I get $75 or $20. They're like, what?
Yeah.
That's LA. $12 at the improv, and it's a check.
Yeah.
And they go, what?
They tax you on it.
They tax you on it. $1,000 for the night? Yeah, the place was packed. And I'm like,
you were performing after a celebrity. They think you're a millionaire.
It's not like New York City where you get 4 spots in a night. You could really hustle yourself and make money, you know?
Yeah, they don't get it. So that's when you meet, you know, and the greatest story is, it's so funny because I haven't seen Gaffigan in a long time since Montreal Comedy Festival, where that Tim was there with me as well. And, you know, this girl comes up to me, and I'm shooting a commercial, and she's an extra. And she says to me, she's all my boyfriend's a comic. And I say, oh, cool, you know, whatever, I figure, open mic, whatever. And anyways, it ends up being, it's Gaffigan, it's her boyfriend, at that point. So it's like awkward. Thank God I didn't put my foot in my mouth. Like, all right, who cares about the open mic or comic? It's Gaffigan.
Yeah.
Right? Now, Gaffigan is not a star. I mean, he's been on Conan at that point, but he's not the fucking Gaffigan that he is now.
Right, right.
You know? And it was so funny. So then I see her in Montreal, and I see him. And he's like, hey, Jimmy, this is my girlfriend. He always did the Italian thing. Hey, Jimmy, you know, to me, right? And he introduces, and she's like, oh, hi, nice to meet you. And she's looking at me like, don't tell him. Each other. Like, she's like, you know, like, and I'm like, we didn't fuck. Like, I met you.
Yeah.
And, you know, so then I talked to her on the side, and she's like, well, you know, I don't want you to, you know, like, I talked to you. Oh, you can't talk to me on set. I'm the star of the commercial. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? So anyways, you never know. So you try to sit and watch somebody. So you sit and, like here's a guy. You ever see Brandon Jackson do stand-up?
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Brandon Jackson, I'll just put it right out there. Brandon Jackson's a great actor. His stand-up is not as good as his acting. But he's a great actor.
Well, there's a lot of actors out there like that, but they get...
But he started as a stand-up comic.
Right.
And made it as an actor. You know what I mean? He's in Tropic Thunder. He's the star of Rush Hour. Yeah. I think he's playing Chris Tucker's character. He's a great... And he's a funny comedian. But when it comes to his acting... So you never know. And I mean, I met him at like Chocolate Sundays as a comic. And you never know who's gonna pop.
That's like Kevin Hart.
You never know.
Kevin.
We know Kevin.
Yeah, and he was funny, but nothing. You know, he was a funny guy.
Now
he's kidding me. It's the fucking
he's a king right now.
There won't be in the modern era until we're directly connected to computers. There won't be another comedian as known as Kevin Hart.
Yeah, you know,
like if Dane blew up off MySpace, Kevin blew up off YouTube,
Twitter,
right.
And, Twitter,
mailing. Twitter's cow's thing. You know what I mean? But, you know, and that's another thing. I learned from some of the major famous comics that are my buddies to take care of their crew, their entourage, of whatever.
Right.
Like, I'm going on a major theater tour, after my tour, I'll be doing the theaters myself with, you know, with this three headliner tour. But then I'm gonna, you know, I bring Tim. I make sure Tim is taken care of. Right. As I am, how I have been taking, like when I work with Russell Peters, takes care of all his comics.
Well, it's the old school formula, and that's the thing that I'm trying to build out here. Even though I run a small bar show, you know, at Springbok,
but Springbok's a great comedy show. I'll knock it. That's one thing. People knock things. If you have something that's good or it's building,
it's a great show. But what I'm saying for a small bar, I'm trying to do the old school formula that the clubs used to do. That people aren't doing anymore because of the freaking bringers. It's, you know, which is you put up good quality comics and you pay your quality comics, which is what I'm doing. Last night, my old partner, I'm not afraid to put people on blast, Big Mike, he came by and he came in the show just to check it out. He's never been. And then Sean Halpin was up. And then we had to go. I told him, I was like, I'd love to talk to you all night. I got to go inside. He's like, but you've seen these guys before. I told him, I said, listen, I'm paying this guy. I want to make sure he's doing his job. And he looked at me and, you know, like I had a disease. He goes, you pay them? And I'm like, yes, this is a profession. This is the reason why we're no longer together anymore, because you're doing a bringer thing. I'm doing this. I take care of people. Like you take, it's a bigger theater, but you're taking care of them. And it's an old school formula. If you want a great show, it may start out slow because you're not doing a bringer show. But eventually the word's going to pick up that this is a quality place where you're going to see good comedy. And then in the long run, you're going to have packed shows.
Yeah, your lineups are great now, man. You know, it's a great show.
And the fact that you pay them, which is a rarity in the non-comedy club sense, is like most comics, I'm assuming, when they're getting paid, they're not working on new shows. Let me pull out my... I mean, if they're professional.
Well, even if they're working on their new stuff, like I give... Everyone 8 minutes, but then a headliner gets like 20 minutes, like you know, like they should, and even that's not a great time for a headliner. Headliner should be doing like 45 to an hour. That's a respectable time, but for a bar show, that's a great time.
Yeah.
So, I don't care if they do half their set new stuff. You know, I mean, as long as they throw out stuff that's gonna.
You know how comics.
Yeah.
Like some of the open mics where they're just like they have no energy to not even acknowledging the crowd and just. Reading off the note, like not even selling.
Right.
Like, you know, when you're being paid, you got to step it up a little bit. Yeah. Like, I would, you know, at open mic, I might, you know, try on some new stuff and not even just improvise, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of don't have the energy behind it.
Just to put it on your recorder so you can listen to it later.
Sure. Man, I'm going to, you know, sell.
What are you doing? Like, what can you let the audience know about your struggle as a comic out here? Where you're starting to get a little respect from other comics, where like when you see me come up, you say, "Hey, man, you got some funny stuff now. I enjoy what you're doing. I watch you before. I might not have watched you."
What do you mean about the struggle?
The struggle, you know, like I always joke with my wife. I say, "I like the struggle. I like to be doing spots and you know not be famous. You know, being the struggle. You know, I mean?
Well, it makes you feel alive because you're constantly like." People don't see this as a comic. They see us. They don't see our life. So they don't know that when I wake up during the day, I have a home office. I'm sitting behind my computer. I'm trying to get spots booked out. They don't see that part of us. So that's the part where we're hustling. We're feeling alive. They only see us on stage. They see us making them laugh, and they think we're big stars. When realistically, like you said, it didn't work out because. Your lady thought you were bigger than what you were. And it happens a lot with civilian women, too, where they'll date a comic because they want to be with the star on stage, but they don't realize the bad part about it. And it's happened to me plenty of times dating girls where they thought I was a star when I'm not, you know? So that's the part of the hustle that I like, just feeling alive, doing the work. And, I mean, the down part about it is... sometimes you might go a week without a booking, you know, and that would be on me for not hustling so hard. But, you know, I just like the feeling of being alive, and it makes you appreciate the gig a lot more.
Right. Good. That's a great point. I'm glad you mentioned that. So, is there anything you want to plug on the show that you have social media, your Facebook, your Twitter, your website, your Steam Fresh Entertainment, you know, whatever?
Yeah, first of all, Comics Life Radio, every Monday and Friday, 4 p.m. live. Go to www.acomicsliferadio, where Jimmy's been on it. It's we bring in headlining comics. We talk about their lives and rather than their stage performance, and you get to know the comic for what the comic is and who they are. You can also catch me, Billy James Batz, B-A-T-Z, on Facebook. Look up Billy Batz on Instagram and Twitter as well. And September 29th, I will be at the Adrenaline Lounge in Vegas for Jack Slammy.
Oh, yeah, Slammy so, shows, all great shows in Vegas. Yeah,
so definitely come on out. I'm taking out my boy Joe Taylor with me, and it's going to be a great show.
So good. So you're taking your buddy that, you know, that's the thing. It's always going to, you know, it's funny. So I was headlining Pechanga Casino last week, and I brought a feature for my first time that I had taken a chance on, and he did the first show. And then I gave him some notes. He goes, do you have any notes? And I said, you know, here's something that my feature that I brought for years did that I love features to do. And I go, there's no ego, there's nothing. I go, but what I'd like you to do is say, hey, thanks a lot. I want to let you know, make sure, you know, you guys stick around for your headliner. Of course, that's why you're here. But he is just great. You're going to enjoy. I'm going to sit down and get a drink and watch him. And I've seen him a million times, but I love what he does.
Yeah.
And that right there, after he did that, because he didn't do it the first show, and he did it, he goes, what a difference. He's like, he goes, it was like they were so excited to see you at that point.
People right, need right. that cosign.
Cosign, vouch for him. You
especially
know?
After seeing the host and then him. It's yeah. like they're already drowned out about seeing comic exactly. after comic, so they want to have that build up.
And then I came on, and I should keep it going for him. I go, we travel all over the country, and I never worked with him ever.
And it's good that you did before. That because afterwards, when people are coming and up to you to shake your hand, they're coming up to him as well because you just co-signed for him. Exactly. So now he's not on the side trying to get whatever couple handshakes he could get.
It was such a difference, and I saw it. And it's not that I've never did that before, but it was like my feature, Chad Shapiro, he would do that. He goes, I've seen this guy. And I never told him to do that, but once I started seeing him do that. So it's funny, like Tim is a headliner, but if he features for me or something, Tim will do it. This guy is my best friend. We came up together. Oh, we write, you know, and it's like such a difference.
And then as a, like I've done it, and Jimmy does it too, when I'm up there headlining, I'll talk about the feature. Not just, yeah. hey, give it up for him.
Yeah.
I'll do a couple mm-hmm. things about him.
You want to do some callbacks.
Yeah, and yeah. kind of vouch for him or her as well, kind of work together. So rather than yeah. just like, oh, here's the next guy.
Yeah.
Here's your headliner. Here's your
and next. That's the thing that comedy is missing these days, too, is just people working as a team. Because yeah. now mm-hmm. it seems like everyone's just out for themselves. And it's like people don't realize that's how the Billy Madison production started with Adam Sandler.
Sandler,
that's how
all his people.
Yeah, all his people. It's mm-hmm. like, you know, a lot of movies that these 90s guys keep on pumping out. It's like you notice they're all the same actors, all the same crew. Certain comedians from the old school day, you'll see, you know, no matter where they go, Gabriel Iglesias still does it. It's like, you know,
brings his boys, yeah.
Yeah, so when you work as a team, it makes mm-hmm. your whole tour and everything stronger and what your product stronger, you know, and that's mm-hmm. it's something huge that another thing comedy's missing these days.
So it's a couple things. I've had a good time. I think that my audience has got to learn a little bit about Billy Batz that no one knew, you know, I mean. You know, as I said, you're crazy all over the place before. Now you're much more focused. Tim pointed it out. It definitely makes sense. What is something I like to always ask? You know, I look up to guys, women, you know, kind of, but not really. You know, I'm a man, so I don't. But so
you look down on women, they're shorter than you.
Women blowing me. Are you sucking my dick? Good. All right. You can bring me to the show. All right. So, who would your man crush be in this business?
Well, I got to go back to the music business on this, and he's my man crush all over the place. Corey Taylor. He is the lead vocalist for Slipknot and Stone Sour. And the reason why people just hear his hardcore stuff all the time. But if you look up his solo act when he tours around the country doing his book signings and stuff, he's doing a Scooby-Doo theme song. You know, I just posted last night on Facebook him doing the SpongeBob SquarePants theme song and him doing that live. And, I mean, just his vocal ability and what he does is great. Another one would be Henry Rollins because he came out of the, you know, metal business and then started doing comedy, and he came out with his own, you know, motivational speaking comedy mm-hmm. special. So Corey Taylor would definitely be my man crush.
Do you know Henry Rollins almost died a couple of years ago? He had a guy staying with him, and the guy got shot and killed.
Really?
He was living in Venice. Yeah, I was just listening to Henry Rollins.
That was like, years ago before he even joined Black Flag. He was living in Venice. Well, and his roommate. It was like a home invasion.
Yeah, it was a home invasion.
And then they shot the
dude. What happened was, Rick Rubin,
Yeah.
Rick Rubin came to his house in like a Rolls Royce.
Yeah.
And all the people in Venice were like, this fucking guy is rich. Henry Rollins is rich. So they fucking watched him go to the grocery store, came in. They shot his friend. And then after he realized, the cops were investigating. And they're like, you see that bullet hole right there? That's where you ran out the window. Wow. They were trying to shoot you, too.
Wow.
So he got away. And then he moved out of Venice. You know what I mean? So here's a guy who I really respect and I loved him. You know, he could act. He was in that movie, back in the day with Charlie Sheen, The Chase, all these, he's great. And once again, what I say is that triple threat.
Yeah.
He's a rock star. He's a comedian, monologist, a ranter, and he can fucking act.
How Jamie Foxx made it.
Completely.
Yeah. Musician, comedian, actor. He's got it all. Can I plug one more thing?
Yes.
Every Wednesday, you catch me at the Springbok in Van Nuys, California. It's on Victory Boulevard. Once again, it's called the Springbok in Van Nuys, California. We have headliners every week. Great show. And also, every Wednesday right after that show, you catch me at the Paragon in Northridge, California.
Right. So, what would your name be if you were a porn star?
Still Billy Bats.
Still be Billy Bats.
Because I got the bats, baby. You want to get whacked by the bats, baby?
whack off the bats. Okay, cool. And one last thing. What is your favorite swear word?
Fuck, because back from the East Coast, that's a verb to us. It's so many ways of using it. It just naturally comes out.
Fuck. So tell your old producer, use the F word towards him.
You fucking fuck.
fuck. No disrespect. All right. Woody, say goodbye.
Adios.
Timomium.
Take care.
Brooklyn Buddha Podcast. We're out. Billy Bats. Thank you, brother.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Wait a minute. You ain't heard nothing yet.
Houston, we have a problem.
They're here. Stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody, look what's going on.